as I was thinking through, like, who's here? Who do we have? There are probably a number of different people represented in the group. And so I kind of want to talk through my prayer for each of you. So I imagine that maybe you are a ministry spouse yourself. And my prayer is that you leave today knowing you're so loved, that there are people who want to serve you well and help you thrive in your ministry context. Or you're married and you are married to a spouse who is serving as a partner in ministry with you. And my prayer is that you'll come away with some discussion points, some things that you can talk to each other about, perhaps some things that will strengthen your relationship. Or another idea, there is a spouse in your ministry context that's not thriving. And I just want you to have some ideas of maybe how to help, where to lean in, some things you can implement. And so my expectation is we have a mixture of all of that and maybe more here. So another consideration before we get started is I've been doing a lot of research related to ministry spouses and how we can lean in, what we can do to help. And I wanted to see if some of the findings that I'd come up with like carried cross-culturally. So I reached out to several ministry friends that I have around Europe. And I think the general trends hold true, but something that's unique is that there's a greater concentration of spouses internationally who are called to ministry in their own right, in terms of having their own role, their own ministry task. My friend Anda, she serves in Romania. And she said it this way. I thought it was really helpful. She says, I feel like I'm called to ministry as well. I also serve in ministry through my group counseling practice, which is very focused on serving the evangelical population. And so I think that people see me as a ministry person in my own right, who is also married to somebody who is a pastor. So there's like an important melding of roles there. I think we should be sure to acknowledge that as kind of part of the equation. So you have your own ministry, but you are seen as a partner in someone else's ministry role. So the path we're going to take is we're going to look at how we can show care. First, we're going to look at some of the symptoms of struggling ministry spouses, and that's kind of a downer, but we'll start there. And I want to keep that brief because I think we can in many ways intuit what that looks like. And then I want to propose a diagnosis. There we're going to ask what's kind of going on under the surface and then look at a proposed cure. So some of the ways that we can care for and lean in. So let's jump to symptoms we see in hurting ministry spouses. So there's three. And if you have the notes in your app or whatever, these are all in there. But the three things that show up a lot are loneliness, conflict, and burnout. So loneliness, kind of a technical definition here, loneliness occurs when you perceive a gap between your desire for social connection and your actual experiences of social connection. So again, there's a gap between your desire for connection and your actual experience of that connection. So that can be a huge drain on ministry spouses. And one of the sneakiest things that I think happens is the language can kind of get in minds of I'm the only one. So I'm the only one who experiences this reality. And so that can be very isolating. So quickly, that's the first one. The second thing is conflict. So the second major symptom, and it can occur in a couple different contexts. So that can be conflict within the organization or conflict in the marriage. And either one of those can be a strain. So in the ministry organization, conflict in an organization is uniquely challenging for spouses because they often have a lot of information, but no power to affect change. So they know what's going on, but they can't do anything about it. And I think that gap can create like a sense of powerlessness. You're like, what do I do? And then the second thing is conflict in marriage, that a conflict in a ministry marriage is really hard because when you're in conflict, who do you talk to when you're struggling? Where do you go for advice? It may feel like you can't go anywhere. And that feeling that I'm alone and I have no one that I can reach out to, that can be a big stressor. And so we have isolation, conflict, and then burnout. So Burnout occurs when, here's a little another little definition, emotional, mental, and physical exhaustion is brought on by prolonged and repeated stress. So emotional, mental, and physical aspects. This shows up like over and over in the literature as a key issue for ministry spouses. And I think often it's because they work hard, they invest deeply, and then crash hard. And that's that burnout. So these three concepts show up in a key study that was done in 2017. Yes?
Could you repeat just the last definition?
The definition, yes, thank you. So burnout occurs when emotional, mental, and physical exhaustion is brought on by prolonged and repeated stress. I'll try to remember to repeat definitions more. All these three ideas showed up in this study in 2017. It was done with about 500 pastors' spouses, and they asked them a huge range of questions. But the four greatest negative factors, the things that created negative feelings and frustrations, they kind of boiled down to this. Experiencing conflict within the church leadership and staff, difficulty in balancing church and family considerations. Specifically, I found this interesting, in making decisions about changing positions related to ministry. A third one, increased burnout, which we've talked about, and then developing callousness toward others in the church. It was a huge thing that created negative feelings. Did you? Callousness, like rough, like a hard-heartedness toward the people. Yeah, callousness. So you can see those same things show up all over the place. So we have loneliness, conflict, burnout. This is very sad. Where do we go from here? A proposal toward diagnosis. So what is going on under the surface? Why do we have ministry spouses in this situation? So the first issue that I think is part of the equation that kind of helps us think through this is what I call a pendulum of expectation. A pendulum is like this, swinging back and forth. And we tend to err in one of two ways. We either have like an overabundance of expectation on ministry spouses, or there's no expectation at all. And either one of those is a challenge for the ministry spouse. The first way, the overabundance of expectation side, I've labeled it two-person career. And I recently stumbled upon this idea, but it's actually been in the research in the literature since like the 1970s. So it's an older idea that actually didn't even start in church ministry or clergy at all. It was like pilots and medical practitioners. But a two-person career is a career that is understood to be one that requires the support involvement of both spouses. While only one spouse is employed, it is assumed that the other will be substantially involved, often in aspects of planning, preparing, and supporting the efforts of the other. So that, the first time I read that definition, so planning, preparing, and supporting the efforts of the other, I laughed out loud. I was reading along and I was like, this is hilarious, because that is so closely aligned to what often happens for ministry spouses. I'm sure many of you have seen or heard ministry contexts where there's an abundance of expectation upon the spouse. And from what I understand, this can vary greatly by culture and context. There's often stated and unstated expectations about what a ministry spouse will be or do. And sometimes they're fair and sometimes they're very burdensome. And there can be a range. So that's one side of the pendulum. And then the other side is the challenge of no expectations. And this is a gift, but it's also challenging in its own way. There's a growing number of, I skipped here, there's a growing number of organizations that have said, well, we really don't have any expectations on our ministry spouses. We want them to be able to serve and live and, you know, be whoever God made them to be. And the ministry spouse is given a ton of freedom, but this can also lead to feelings of isolation, because where does this spouse belong? If they want to serve and they have a heart for ministry, sometimes they even have to fight for that place. They can have a lot of flexibility, but they can start to feel like, well, am I wanted in the ministry? And so in an attempt to protect and not have expectations, we can almost create a feeling of exclusion where, oh, you're okay, you don't have to serve, but then, well, what do I do? Where do I fit? And either of those situations, the challenge occurs, I think, most predominantly when the expectations of the organization and the expectations of the ministry couple are misaligned, when they have a different view about what should be happening, when there's a difference of view or thinking. Just kind of as a side here, there's actually four views of ministry couples, of how they relate to one another. And this is kind of like a little tangent, and then we'll kind of circle back. But the four views are that ministry couples relate as companion, as sacrifice, assistant, or partners. So companion, sacrifice, assistant, or partner. So I'm going to read this citation from a thinker called Leonard Sweet. But he said, we have people who marry someone who's in ministry as a companion. They're not because the person is clergy or in ministry, but in spite of it. So they're wanting to be, they're with their person, but they view their role as that of a companion. Then we have people who sacrifice. That's the second category. They give up personal goals, material gains, and opportunities for their marriage. So they're great with that. They're like, this is a sacrifice, and that's good. I'm happy with that role. Then category three, we have spouses of pastors, and they assist, and the role of an assistant. They're a partner without being paid, and that's their spot. And then we have what he calls two clergy marriages, where they're professional partners in ministry, and they're both serving together. There are others who have articulated models similar. There's one more recently. His name is Johnson, and he labels it the partnership model, layperson model, and independent model. So kind of the same thinking, less about tone and disposition and more about function in that one. So layperson, a partnership, layperson, and independent. And the partnership is a spouse who embraces the idea of a shared calling. The layperson, they're committed to their spouse more than their task. And then the independent, they work intentionally to not be involved in ministry. So kind of boiling those all down, that's kind of a helpful aside for me. If you are a person who is in an independent model and your organization wants you to be a partner, that's challenging. And that's where there's going to be a crisis or conflict there that can come into play. So we're working on through our symptoms here. That's the pendulum. And then we're going to jump into resilience. That's the next topic there. Resilience is the capacity to withstand and recover quickly from difficulties. So capacity to withstand and recover quickly from difficulties. And now I have the most cumbersome and clunky definition ever. Are you ready? Here we go. Resilience is the process and outcome of successfully adapting to difficult or challenging life experiences, especially through mental, emotional, and behavioral flexibility and adjustment to external and internal demands. That is from a textbook. I'm happy to email this to you if that is helpful. So I'll go through it again. It's the process and outcome. So it's what we're going through and what is the result, process and outcome of successfully adapting to difficult or life-changing experiences, which we all go through, especially through mental, emotional, and behavioral flexibility and adjustment to external and internal demands. And that is resilience. So when resilience is waning, when we feel like we're not bearing up under the weight of the work that we're doing, we do not strive to scrounge up to develop more resilience. If you're working like, I need to be more resilient, you're just going to get more burnt out. It's the opposite of what is possible. Rather, you aim toward meaning. So you aim toward meaning. It's not work harder, try more. But you look at the root of what motivates and drives you. And if we're looking to the source of our strength and life in Christ, to our meaning in life in Him, and renewing our mind and our heart in communion with Him, that renewed sense of meaning, that ultimate meaning, that will develop in us a resilience that we're longing to have. So you can push through almost any hardship if there is a good reason for it. You go through a hard thing, but there's a reason why you're going through that hard time. But it's when meaning is diminished, when there's what feels like this is a meaningless struggle, that's when resilience wanes. That's when it dissipates. So those are the symptoms, the underlying things that are at play. And so I want to look now at a cure. So I was working through this initially, and I wrote it as a cure. But that's not quite the right idea, because a cure implies that we're going to fix this. And caring for ministry spouses, caring for anyone, any type of pastoral care, it's more of a process. And so this is a treatment plan. We'll call it that. And so, because it's a process rather than a prescription. So how can we help? I want to propose that we can care for, cultivate, and coach ministry spouses. And in doing so, we can help them find greater joy in their role. So care, that's the first one. When we're thinking about caring for ministry spouses, we want to consider looking after their spiritual health and their emotional health. So if I see a hurting ministry spouse, and that can look like any number of different ways, I want to ask, how are they doing spiritually? We want to ask questions about their relationship with God, how that is going, and then how are they doing emotionally? We ask after their emotional health. And by that, I mean, how are they processing life? How are they processing the situations that they're walking through? So that's care. And then we want to cultivate. So there are two different ways here. We want to cultivate appreciation for ministry spouses. They need to know that they're loved. We all need to know that we're loved. But since this is our topic, they need to know they're loved. And we want to help them cultivate work-life balance. So these two are kind of different types of cultivation. One's for us and one's for in their lives. But in cultivating appreciation, that can come in the form of big things and little things. We can write a card, we can speak words of affirmation, and that can be other substantive, like acts of service. It almost doesn't matter what you do. Just knowing that someone sees you and says thank you, recognizes that you're serving, that appreciation is so valuable. And then the other one is to cultivate the work-life balance. We want to help ministry spouses as we can. And often, it's not so much that we're like implementing a program, but we're protecting what they're already trying to pursue. So if they're endeavoring to have a time of rest and renewal, if they're saying, okay, I'm taking this day off, we do our best to protect that. And of course, there are times when we can't, but we're careful about the timing of our calls and requests. And so that's how we cultivate that balance as we are able. So care, cultivate, and finally coach. So all people follow a journey on their walk with Jesus. And I believe ministry spouses need to walk this journey too. And it is through brokenness, toward health, and for growth. So through brokenness, toward health, and for growth. So through brokenness, as we coach through brokenness, we acknowledge that ministry can be tough, that there are hard things that we walk through. And we also acknowledge that we may not have dealt with those ministry challenges in the best ways. So we see both the brokenness in the world around us, and then we see the brokenness in our own lives, that God is working to redeem and renew. And so that is through brokenness. But we don't stay in the brokenness. We want to move through the brokenness toward health. And seeing the broken world around us drives us to Jesus and his help for in our lives. So we want to be working toward healthy hearts, bodies, and minds. And we want to strive toward wholeness in spite of the brokenness that is in our world. So we're going toward health. And finally, for growth, we're striving to have growing and thriving people, growing and thriving ministry spouses. So we do want growth, and there's three ways that growth shows up. So growth and meaning, like we talked about in the aspect of resilience, ministry spouses that are doing well are increasingly growing in their meaning. They have a purpose in the work they do. When things are challenging, they have a clear reason for continuing in their role. So they're growing in meaning. They're growing in maturity. That's the next one. They have rich and fulfilling relationship with the Lord. And this mature and precious relationship is what fuels them for all of life. So they're growing in that maturity and growing in ministry. This one is really beautiful. So growth in ministry. Those in ministry work of any kind with the greatest effectiveness are often those who have been wounded most deeply by ministry. The wounds of ministry allow you to serve with greater fruitfulness going forward. And so thriving ministry spouses are those engaged in ministry, using their gifts and serving with joy as God has called them. So there we have it. We care, we cultivate, and we coach. So that's kind of fun, alliteration there. So an action plan. These are just some kind of practical, granular brainstorms of ways that we can actually do this. And I'd love to talk more and hear your ideas of other ways we can lean in. But as a spouse of a ministry partner, what can we do? So the guiding principle, I think, for spouses is to connect. The biblical foundation for that is John 13, 34 to 35. It says, "A new commandment I give to you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another, and by this everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another." And then again in 1 Thessalonians 4, 9, it says, "Now about your love for one another, we do not need to write to you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other." So just that underlying foundation of we're showing love to one another in the marriage relationship. And so here's some ideas. Remember that your relationship is more important than your role. It's easy to get bogged down in the busyness of life with our spouses, but with our spouse, we need to have a different framework. And connection is more important than career. And so just keeping those in balance and remembering that focus. Another one is acknowledge the challenges and celebrate the joys. So we don't ignore the fact that sometimes things are hard in ministry. We can't ignore that. When you see your spouse being treated unfairly, oh, that is so hard. That is really rough. But we don't want to focus all of our evening conversation on the challenges. We want to celebrate the joys as well. Recognizing when God is working in people's hearts, that is so exciting. So we have found that prayer together is one of the sweet ways to do this. Regular prayer as a couple, where we can just the two of us come before the Lord and say, "Okay, Lord, we bring you these hard things, and we are just praising you for how you're working in some beautiful situations." Then a third one is to serve together when possible. And now I know that this is not always possible. There's all kinds of inconveniences of serving at the same time, especially when you have young children. It's quite the hurdle. But serving together for the sake of the gospel binds you together as a couple. And there's some real unity that is created when you can work together to pour out. So those are some ideas of connecting as ministry spouses. And then a shift for ministry leaders. So if you are over an organization and you have spouses in your organization that you see that you want, like, where do I lean in? How do I help? The guiding principle there, I think, is to protect. The biblical foundation for that is 1 Timothy 5, verses 17 through 18. It says this: the elders who direct the affairs of the church are well worthy of double honor, especially those whose work is preaching and teaching. For scripture says, do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain, and the worker deserves his wages. So the idea there is just we caring for our ministry leaders, we honor them, provide for their needs, and just carrying that over to care for their families as well, finding ways to encourage and support just the whole family. Practical ways. Kind of alluded to this earlier in that cultivate section, but honor time that is set aside for family connection. My hope is that ministry families are working to set aside a time to Sabbath. And if the organization is aware of that, those times, to be intentional about not encroaching if at all possible. Obviously, things come up. That's just part of what happens. But to do our best to not send that email unless we have to. Another way is to celebrate their gifting. Ministry leaders can support ministry spouses by doing this. I think it can be simple, like, I see that you're working hard here. I love seeing you serve with the kids. I love whatever it is that someone's doing. But one ministry spouse I interviewed said it this way. I'm going to read you what she wrote. And one of the most encouraging things for them was what she said: when people at their church let me serve them with my own gifts. She wrote, I'm a leader and a counselor, and they've allowed me to use those gifts rather than expecting me to work with kids or serve on the worship team. I've done those things as well, because as a small church, we often have to wear more than one hat. But I think it is clear for everyone that those are not my main gifts. And so seeing and recognizing the individual giftedness in people around us, that's a gift for everyone, but it applies for spouses as well. A third one is express interest in their life and encourage their endeavors. So in many ways, this is just being a good friend. But if a ministry spouse knows that people in leadership in particular are interested in their life, that can be a huge level of encouragement. I know for me personally, this has been one of the ways I've felt most cared for in our current ministry context. There are several elders at the church who make a point to check in with me almost every Sunday. And they just ask, like, how are the kids doing? How was your week? Did you go on a walk? I mean, it's very simple things, but they're like my dad's age. And having these father figures check in with me each week to see if I'm doing okay, that makes me feel very safe and protected. So that's just a simple example of how a small action can create those feelings of protection. You can see that there. And so then the last one, as friends, if you're a friend of someone who is in ministry, the guiding principle there is to relate. The biblical foundation, Romans 15, verses 7, and then verse 14, it says, accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God. And then, I myself am convinced, my brothers and sisters, that you yourselves are full of goodness, filled with knowledge, and competent to instruct one another. And then again, there's another verse in Galatians 5:13. It says, you, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. So just that idea of serving and loving each other in that way. So a couple ideas. Assume the best. When your friend is a ministry spouse, it's helpful to remember that you probably don't have all the information about what they're going through. and they can't share that information with you sometimes. So it's tricky to know how to be supportive when there's an information gap. We can fill that gap with trust or with suspicion, and we want to make the choice to fill that gap with trust. A ministry spouse I know put it this way. They wrote, be kind. Sometimes life is hard. We have access to pain, but no control over how to deal with it. Sometimes our husbands come home and tell us about a difficult conversation, and we feel the pain, but we are not invited to be part of the solution because that's not our place. Sometimes a ministry wife carries stories that she can never share, so be kind. And so in our kindness, we're working to assume the best out of each other. Another idea is encourage and affirm. So similar to many of these, look for things that you see in your friend that they're doing well and let them know that you notice. Just knowing that you're not overlooked is the idea there. And then the last one, this is one of my favorite pieces of advice, is ask and invite, even if you think you know what they'll say. So ministry families, as we've discussed, are often lonely, and they're busy, and we all know that they're busy, and they have a lot of demands on their schedule. And sometimes in trying to protect and care for them, we start to withhold invitations. And it's not out of malice. We're just thinking through their life and saying, well, they won't be able to make it. Like, they're too busy that day. That's a Sunday. They have church and all these things. So we just won't even ask. But don't withhold the invitation, because it is so nice to be included. And the invitation is meaningful. It helps with that feeling of inclusion. You feel like you're part of the group if you are asked.